But I haven't got amplification, so I hope I can speak loud enough. Is it all right at the back? You'll have to wave if you can't hear me. And I'm very happy if you ask me questions as I'm going along, because that makes it more fun. Okay, so this is me there. Maybe you can see Zach and Bethany, and my mum, if you've got very good eyesight as well, hiding at the back. We all went to Nepal together to visit the charity over there. So rather than starting about the charity, I'll just tell you a few of the stories of the women, because I think it's always best to start there. That's why we're doing this. So I'm going to talk about Meena. I've lost the... this is too high for me to jump and point now. So Meena's the lady there, the short lady. Can you see her? Yeah. And prior to her living at the home here, she lived in a cellar room. No windows in her cellar. She slept on the floor. Her son had the only bed. He was about 16 at the time. And each night she would roll out her carrier bags and sleep on the floor on these carrier bags. So we're so delighted, really, that she's had her life turned around and is now at the home. So she's a very pretty lady, and apparently chickens like pretty ladies. So she's up this slope here, scurrying away from the chickens because they were chasing her. But it's lovely, isn't it? Just that they were having fun and we were able to share these jokes with them. This lady's called Parwati. I'm not sure, maybe I've mentioned her here before. She used to be a mad lady, so you can kind of... she used to run around outside one of the temples. She'd been dedicated to the Hindu gods and had orange in her hair and was essentially quite sort of mad and bonkers, really. She would beg for money and beg for food, and just a really sad condition that she was in. There's obviously a lot of demonic activity that goes along with Hinduism, and she was really in quite a bad position. So thank the Lord, he's healed her. She's just in an amazing position now. She still suffers a little bit from depression, and her son's also got some mental issues. He's in a mental hospital. Well, he was, as I was visiting, I think he was going to be in for about 2 weeks. And so, you know, they need a bit more prayer. But we're so delighted, really, that she's managing to hold down a job. She sells ice cream to children outside the school and, you know, is able to look after herself, have her own home.
How did that happen, Anna? How did she get healed? How did
she... She started going along to a church, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how she went from being this mad woman, but the church possibly has people that just go to these temples and pray, really. So, yeah. This lady's called Ita Maya, and that's our manager on the right there, Beena. So Ita Maya's got throat cancer, and she could barely speak when we visited her and barely hear. She looks after two of her grandchildren because her daughter, the mother of the children, is in Dubai, I think, working. And just really does need your prayers still, because she can't go into hospital for this operation. She doesn't know who can look after the children, the young children, for her. They won't stay with anybody else. And she's just struggling really to just get by, although she's okay. She has a lovely room. She just needs to have this operation. Obviously, it's very difficult if you can't talk and you can't hear. It kind of cuts you off from the world a bit. So you might have seen on the map earlier where Nepal is. I thought I'd just put this in case you're not aware. It's between India and China, just sandwiched in the middle there, and its claim to fame is Mount Everest in the Himalayas. And it's the poorest country outside of Afghanistan in Asia. So I think another thing I haven't done before is show you many pictures of what Kathmandu is like. I tried to make it a little bit different this time. So this is the river there, and Nepalis just throw their rubbish really into the rivers. So in the past, this would have been like leaves, because they would have eaten off leaves for their food. But obviously now that we've got plastic and things, they're still throwing their rubbish into the rivers, but nothing happens to it. It just sits there. So these rivers just stink as you get close to them there. Just horrid. And there's another picture there. That's the main river through Kathmandu. So as the river flows into Kathmandu, that's where they burn the bodies and the cremations take place. So you can just imagine that you've got that to start with coming into the river, and then all the rubbish as well.
Are they doing anything about the rubbish in the river?
No. And then this is another picture of the rubbish just piled on the side of the street. So this is actually at the end of a World Heritage site. If you can just see the top of that temple there. That's all sort of UNESCO World Heritage. And you come around the corner and there's all this rubbish on the floor. And it's just horrid. So that rubbish won't be collected. That'll just get burnt. And again, just stinks as it's burnt. And there's lots and lots of stray dogs on the streets. so you have to be careful. That's where our son Zach's fear of dogs comes from, because he grew up there. And then the water is a huge problem. So this is one lady lived in a house that has got water. This is a well that's kind of on her sort of patio. It's sort of just outside her door. But as you can see, pretty grimy and scummy. And if our ladies don't have water, then they have to buy water from a tanker. So like a petrol tanker that we have has water in it instead, and they go out to the street and buy it. And the tanker perhaps comes every twice a week, perhaps. So they have to make it last. And then,
where does it get water from? Up in the mountains? Something?
Well, yeah, they go slightly out of Kathmandu, and you see them at the streams and waterfalls filling up the tank, and then it drives back in. So this is a lady, Bishnu, lives at this house. I think I've showed a picture a bit similar to this. So before the flash went off for this was pitch black. So one of our ladies, 70-year-old, lives there. But this is the state of the housing in Nepal, really. We can't do a lot to change the housing. It's just kind of the way it is. And then this is a picture of Eileen. Eileen is the lady who kind of got me involved in the charity. So when we lived over there for a couple of years, and Eileen was an elderly missionary, she asked me to get involved and to support some women. But during this visit, which of course was the Jubilee in England, it was kind of Eileen's Jubilee, because she's the same age as the Queen and has been in Nepal for 60 years. So it was, you know, she's a wonderful, wonderful lady. She's done so much. I'll come on to what she's achieved a bit more later on, but she's really amazing and still very, very English. She still listens to the world news and knows exactly what's going on in the world. So this is the home that we've opened. This opened 1st of July last year. We took over the lease, so that's good, isn't it? A whole year. And we're just delighted, as you can see, much better than the places where some of our ladies were living before. There's a training hall at the top, then kitchens off to the right, and then the main accommodation in that block at the bottom. There. And you can see nice light and airy rooms. This is the kitchen where they all cook together. Rice. And then this lady, this is just along the front of the room. So it's just nice fellowship, really. That's what we're most pleased with, is that the ladies have moved in and they're getting on well with each other, because it could have been a disaster, really. They could have moved in and started arguing, but they haven't. So this is Dolma. She's really clever. So it's not such a good fit. She makes these baskets, which are called dokos, and sits there. So it's better than I could do. And there's the dining room there. And then we've also got lots of animals that are moving in with our ladies. So we've got some goats here. We've got some chickens as well that are chasing Mina. And then we have this cow as well. And this cow's called Angela. The man that sponsored the cow and bought it for us wanted to name the cow. So it's Angela.
With the animals, is it just to feed themselves, or do they use them to sell the produce?
It's both. Oh. Yeah, we're setting up a kind of cooperative for them to take the earnings from what they're selling, and we're just sort of writing the rules. But most of it, they're consuming themselves, the vegetables. So our cooperative's never going to be profit-making. So
I think the goats and the chickens more than vegetables.
The goats they'll eat, but only kind of at special occasions and festivals. But they're making ghee. Ghee's their biggest income from the cow. And curds. We got to try curds. Is that loud enough? Okay, sorry, that's just a little video to show you them having fellowship there. So it's not just that we're providing the sort of material circumstances at the home, they are having fellowship as well. So I put that photo in as an extra for you, because that's all the welly boots. If anyone donated any Wellington boots to me, that's them being handed out. Although it was a bit ironic on the day, because it was boiling hot, they didn't need boots. But it is raining now. So it all got muddy. So this is a little girl called Sabita, and I don't know if you remember when I got back 2 years ago, I think I showed a photo of her. She did have grey hair and was hugely under malnourished when I was there 2 years ago. So it's just great that she's living at the home now and running around playing with our two children and just looking healthy, going to school. So it's a real sort of success story. And then this is her little brother Subin playing with Zach. Subin had pneumonia 2 years ago, so again, really changed his life around. You can see the view there, it's a bit hazy, but that's looking down to Kathmandu. And then this lady is Rebecca, and this was quite an emotional meeting for me, really. So Rebecca's husband, I think about 8 years ago, maybe a decade ago, he died of cancer, and I think he was a good man from what I can gather. She was then left in her village on her own, and another man raped her. So because of that, and because of the way Nepal is, she was kind of taken away from her children and locked up and labelled as being worthless and a woman, and a bad woman, really, even though obviously it wasn't her fault. So the children were taken by her deceased husband's family, and she was then forced to marry the man that had raped her to make matters even worse. So of course he continued to abuse her. She had a daughter with him who's now at the home with her, and eventually ran away and escaped and found her way to a pastor at a church and has ended up with us. So that was emotional, you know, meeting somebody like that and knowing where she's come from. But she was just so happy, and she loves the cows that we've got. She takes care of them.
Does she have any contact with her other children?
No, don't think so, no. There she is. So that's that. I think that just smile is amazing, really. If anything that I do is worthwhile, it's just seeing that smile. So this is some of our staff that are there. There's me and my mum, Bina, our manager. Monju in the middle is just amazing. She is excellent at farming and knows about all of that side, but also can do office work and teach literacy. So it's kind of a good combination that God sent her to her, really. And then the lady on the end is Subhadra. She was one of the women that we were helping. She was a single mother and is now working for us at the home. So that's great. We'd love to have given her a job. And she's also attending these literacy lessons, so she was really pleased to show us her books where she's been practicing and writing things down, learning her alphabet. This lady's called Chechi. She's 90 years old, and she's from a part of Nepal which is beyond Everest, so near Tibet. Her dress is a little bit different, and she doesn't speak Nepali. She speaks this Lomi dialect, and there's another lady at our home that speaks Lomi and Nepali. So it's a real sort of blessing from God, really, that both of them wanted to come and live at the home, not just one of them, not just her, because then she wouldn't be able to communicate. She could do with your prayers, really, because her nephew was a missionary, and he was travelling up to this Lomi district to tell the people there about the gospel, and he died in a snowdrift. So we haven't told her. We didn't think that she can sort of manage to hear that news. But it's hard. It's just sad, you know, that these extra things. She's already impoverished and poor, and then her nephew's gone. So this is the sewing course that we ran. The ladies turned up early. This was before the class began, to kind of finish off some garments. So it's a really popular course. We have a big waiting list for it. And it is the shop that we run, that you'll see in a second, is what Dayspring supports. So here's the ladies. And I think there's just another video.
When you say is it just run for ladies in the centre, or do other people come?
It's not run for the centre, it's separate actually. It's run by a pastor and his wife in the north of Kathmandu, and it just takes in ladies that haven't got any other skill there. Okay. So that course we run, it takes in anyone, so Hindus, Christians, but about half the course is usually Christians by the end of it, so they have to sing every day. And that's the shop that Dayspring supports, so it looks a bit crowded there, doesn't it? But it's doing really well. It's really well kept. The ladies that work in there, you know, just keep it immaculately clean, which is great, because Kathmandu, as you saw earlier, can be pretty mucky. Over to the left, if I find it, yeah. So that's the pastor and his wife that run it. The pastor, for the first time I hadn't heard it before, shared his testimony with us. He used to be a drug addict and, you know, has turned his life around. So that's good. They're a really blessed couple. And it's called Cyrene. The course and the shop are called Cyrene. Because, was it Simon of Cyrene? Was one that carried Jesus' cross. And so it's about carrying one another's burdens. That's why they've chosen the name.
Is the
For day spring. Maybe. On talent.
Did you notice that before?
I think I've noticed the bloom before, yeah. And then this lady's called Bidia. So my mum, when she was over there, she'd split a skirt up the side here, so she got it fixed. That was good, wasn't it? We're going to visit it then. So they're really happy. The shop's going well. So thank you for your support, because that's Dayspring runs the shop. And these are some of the garments that they make. So in Nepal, it's the other way around to here. In Nepal, if you're a normal person, then you go and buy your material first, and then you take it to the tailoring shop to get made up, so you have it bespoke made. And then if you're posh in Nepal, then you go to the buy it off the peg shops, the cool shops. Right, so I just wanted to go through a few ladies at the end that really do need your prayers. So this lady in the orange, in the Dayspring orange, on the right, is called Bimala. And this is the only picture, best picture I've got of her, because I think she was hiding most of the time I was there. And she's hiding because she's got HIV. And our manager over there, Bina, says it's a sort of self-imposed stigmatism. She feels bad and won't join in. And she's kind of doing her rota duties, but apart from that, isn't really mixing with the other ladies. So she is a Christian, but, you know, to just really do with your prayers for her to just be happy with herself, really, and to feel confident again.
Are you able to get some of the drugs to stop HIV?
Yes, they're provided freely in Nepal, because the World Health Organization provides them freely.
Good.
And we've given some training to the other ladies in the home about it. So then, I think from their point of view, they haven't got any prejudice against her. It's her own prejudice. She got HIV because her husband was sleeping with prostitutes when she was married to him. So she's got a son. Thankfully, he hasn't got HIV.
What's her name?
She is Bimala. And then this lady is Yamuna. She was bitten by a dog just about 4 days before we got there. So she was lying on her front on the bed, actually. She just sat up for this photo, but obviously in quite a lot of pain. So we gave about £50 to pay for her taxi fares to the hospital and her anti-rabies drugs, which is about a month's wages over there. So it's not too much for us, but a lot for her. And then this is Neer Kumari. This was another hard meeting for me. Her husband committed suicide a year ago now. It was 11 months ago then. And as you can see, she's really not eating properly. She's quite malnourished. And she was just so gentle and nice and kind. She said her husband was a good man, but he got into debt, so he killed himself.
Is she in the home now?
She's not in the home. She's actually a Hindu at the moment, but she was happy for us to pray with her. So she's on the way. And if I show you two photos time, I'll show you what we've got to sort her out. So these are her children. Amata and Grishma are her children. And they were just so lovely. My children had been quite antsy. They've been very difficult before I got there. And her children just chatted to them, really gentle, asked them lots of questions. Her eldest daughter, who's 12, I should think must be very, very bright, because she had really good English. And to come from a home... her mother's illiterate, and then to make that difference, to have then good English and good Nepali is quite a jump. She must be bright. So, and you could tell as well the father must have been good, because the girls were lovely, if you see what I mean. So they still miss their dad. They still ask for their dad. And they live in this one room building. I mean, that's the norm. And it's especially the norm now, because there's no dad. So the girls need to live with their mum. So just pray for them, really. There's the little girl. The little girl was very shy, so I had to move around and take another photo. And then this is Meetu. Meetu is a lady that we've been supporting for quite a while. She had leprosy. She was high caste, so if you know anything about the caste system, they're kind of at the top of society and everybody reveres them and treats them like gods. But she contracted leprosy. And actually, in the caste system, it's the top castes that are most sort of strict in their adherence to the Hindu customs. So because she got leprosy, her family wouldn't let her wear shoes or take care of herself in the house. Because it's a Hindu custom that you take your shoes off in the house. But of course, if you've got leprosy, you need to wear shoes and protect your feet. So she had lost... I think you can just see at the bottom there's part of a finger missing and she'd lost a few toes.
How did she get the leprosy?
Just poverty in Nepal. Yeah, just sort of malnourishment and not looking after yourself right.
So being high caste doesn't mean rich?
No. No, that's completely mixed. In fact, we've just been referred a lady who the Watermans are going to sponsor, who is the same caste as the Prime Minister. We've got this really high caste lady, but she's had a terrible story. So it doesn't mean anything, really. So Me Too, yes, we pay her medical bills, and she also has diabetes. But she left her family at the age of 18 after getting leprosy. She was then converted and has this amazing story and became an evangelist, of all things. Mm. So she now is going to visit Neer Kumari. They live quite close to each other, who's the lady whose husband committed suicide, and just keep an eye on her and check she's eating. And she's quite an amazing woman, this lady. She's like the Nepali version of Eileen, the missionary I was telling you about. And she will convert her, I'm sure. She will be a Christian. So that's good. But pray for that. Pray for that lady. Right. I'm on to him. Oh, I'll leave you there looking at that for a second. So the photos I've just shown you, I've kind of shown a couple of times to another church and things, but I wanted just really to thank you, because I love coming back to Dayspring and talking about the charity here, because you've got an ongoing interest and it does allow me to kind of share my heart a little bit more than I can elsewhere. So I was thinking about my overall impressions of the country and what I could tell you really that was happening overall. And I'm afraid it is quite bleak. The country is struggling. And the word that kept coming to me on my trip this time was suicide. So, if you'll indulge me, I told my parents I was speaking about suicide today. Not for too long, but for a bit. And they said, oh dear, that sounds not fun. But I can't really pretend. I can't pretend that the country is wonderful. So just before we left to go to Nepal this time, we had news that a lieutenant colonel had committed suicide, and he's the guy, if you've watched Himalaya with Michael Palin, I don't know if you've seen that, Michael Palin goes up into the hills to recruit Gurkhas, and then this guy Adrian goes missing and the Maoists have taken him. Well, anyway, it's this guy that's committed suicide, so high ranking in the army. And he'd just recently left the army basically, and I think lost his identity and just feeling bad. So that kind of was the start of our trip, and people that we're meeting out in Nepal were obviously upset about Adrian. We also stayed in Pokhara, and this is the bridge outside the British camp. Well, it's the ravine, but it's not the actual bridge. And people, men that used to not get into the Gurkhas, would come outside of the camp and jump into this ravine. So that's how high it is. It was so scary just taking my two children across, who were running about and not caring, really. So down here, this tiny little speck, I mean, that's a buffalo down there. That's how high you are. It's just at the back. So again, suicide kept coming back to me. And then, of course, meeting Neer Kumari and learning about her husband. And then, really, as I was going through the experiences that I was having, the country seemed to be in a state of national suicide. So we arrived in another strike, and Nepal has these strikes all the time, and there were plenty when we lived there. And 2 years ago when I arrived, there was a strike on, and I had to get a tourist bus, the only ones that were running, out to a hotel, and the last mile I had to carry my bags. And in fact, it was so weird seeing a tourist carrying bags and looking like a Sherpa that the press took a photo of me. That was 2 years ago. And then this time we arrived in another strike. This shows how often they are. And the strikes, sorry, are called by the political groups. They just get upset with each other and say, let's have a strike to protest against it. But it has no effect, really, because the strikes are so common, they don't do anything. And we had
In a strike, no vehicles are allowed to leave, no businesses are allowed to open, so everything is shut down.
Yes, sorry. So, as we drove up to where we were staying, we managed to get a taxi. It was very expensive because it was the strike, but they stick a little A4 notice on the front saying tourist bus, and they will drive in the strike. But we did have a stone, I think, thrown at our vehicle, it passed it in front of it, of us, because we were driving through the crowd that were protesting. So these strikes They're just really unhelpful. They'd give Nepal such a bad image because you arrive and you're so stressed knowing you've got to get from the airport to where you're going. And Nepal depends on tourist income. If it keeps having these strikes, it is going to certainly put people off. I feel that they need a sort of national hero, a kind of Bob Geldof, to stand up and say, right, people, let's stop having these strikes. Just because the political parties say we want one, you know, you as the normal people need to stop going to have these strikes. Also read, whilst I was over there, the Booker Prize winning book, which I just happened to pick up because I thought, oh, well, I'll read a Booker Prize winning book while I'm over there. And that was also about suicide and about giving up and taking yourself out of the problem rather than solving the problem. And then what is so depressing about meeting all the young people in Nepal. Just a second, I've got another photo I've missed. Yeah, this is the strike. So no vehicles, no shops open, people out and about. What's so depressing about meeting all the young people in Nepal is that they all want to leave. So none of them are being educated to get jobs in Nepal, really. They all have the ambition of just getting out of the country. And it's just depressing. After a little while, you meet these lovely, intelligent people who have enthusiasm and a bit of spirit about them, but they just want to leave. And then one of the most depressing points came when I was over in Nepal with another hat on, because I'm doing some research for my dissertation, and I went to visit Nepal Rastra Bank, which is like the Bank of England, really. It's their national bank, but nothing so grand as that. It was a dilapidated falling down building that it was in. And the man that I spoke to, they're on about raising money, and he said, you know, if we can't raise the money, it doesn't matter, the treasury is full. And as he basically implied that the own government wouldn't spend the money from the treasury on Nepal, improving it, because it was too unstable, the country. So again, I just feel like that's a national form of suicide, because they've got funds, they've got finances, but they're not spending them, they're not helping their own people. And it was just kind of depressing. I've got a few photos here of the government school that we visited, which that's the class Bethany would be in if she was over there. But you can see no toys, nothing really. Pretty dirty on the walls. At least they had a teacher, so often the teacher doesn't turn up. This is the class Sack would be in. So again, pretty grim. So you can see the frustration I felt when hearing that the Treasury wasn't spending money that it's got on all these people that need it, really.
Why are there so few children?
Well, because if anyone can pay, they can send them to a private school. So these were kind of like the down and outs in a way. So class sizes are better than over here, actually, in the government school. But then would you want to send your child to a school like this?
So this is a free school. So there is schooling?
Yes, there is free schooling.
But it's rubbish?
Yes.
Do they have to buy their own uniforms?
Yes, they still have to buy uniforms, books, and they have to buy exercise books. Yes.
And buy your own exercise books?
Yes.
It's incredible, because in the hills as well, you'll see, you'd be up in the hills, everything else is dirty, then you've got these really smart kids going to school in their uniforms. So, in the hills, you get these really, everything's dirty and everything's really poor. You'll get the kids going to the government school because they're proud to be able to go to the school, and that uniform will be smart and immaculate when you're walking in it.
So if there's any teachers here that'd like to twin their classes with a school, then I can put you in touch. And then just another one to show you, just really, it's just grubby and not that inspiring to learn in. So let me look at my notes.
But then isn't that better than what they would have if they didn't go there?
Yes, it's better than that, but it's I'm
from our perspective, it probably is. From their perspective, that is probably.
Well, I think they deserve better than this, and I think their treasury should be spending the money that it's got rather than just holding on to it.
So, somebody get back me understands, and other people might not. What sort of government do they have, and how is that related to the ruling?
That's incredible. They haven't got a government at the moment. They ousted it. They're rewriting their constitution.
Right.
So, not a very effective government, basically.
When they got rid of the king, and then the Maoists sort of came in, they had some elections, they elected the government, but it was a constituent assembly, so it was members of all the parties, and their job was to write a new constitution for the country, because they obviously got rid of the old one, the way it used to work, and they were basically given a deadline to do this. And I think they've gone past at least two deadlines now, where they've basically reappointed themselves. So though they originally elected, they keep extending their own term past the point at which they're supposed to do it. So the strike, when we arrived, was because that was when the new constitution was supposed to be announced. They were still arguing about it. And one of the biggest problems they've got is that everybody, you talk about the caste system, everybody wants their own state. Each caste wants its own state in a different part of the pool. So when Anna talks about national suicide, they're almost arguing about tearing themselves apart. So that deadline was passed, the constitution wasn't then announced, and they've reappointed themselves again. Well, they dissolved themselves, didn't they? But I think they've now reappointed themselves again, and given a date of November for new elections to appoint a new constituent assembly to write a new constitution. So it's...
it's just a vicious cycle, really. I mean, it's why the Treasury money is not being spent, because they haven't got the government, but it's still wrong. So there is some hope, though. So I did want to share a bit with you about the hope that there is. So this guy is called Krishna. Now, Eileen, who's this super-duper missionary, she, when she was younger and healthier, she had children of leprosy patients that she paid for their schooling and she helped them through. And there's now, this group of children is about 40 to 45 years old. And they're quite a strong peer group, and they're strong within the church in Nepal. So Bina, our manager, is married to Samuel. He was one of these children. Shova, who is the pastor's wife that runs the shop and the sewing course, is one of them. And then this guy, Krishna, too. Now, sadly, Krishna was a Christian and isn't a Christian now. He's a Hindu. But he lost his son when his son was seven years old. His son accidentally got strangled at his home. And Krishna, inspired by this, wants to make a difference. And he's just an amazing guy, really. So if you look closely at those sort of balcony bits behind him, that's made of bottles. And Krishna's a kind of leading guy in recycling and reusable and this biodynamic farming that we've got going at the home. And even travels to America now. He's such an expert in this. So there is hope. He's got a real vision for the community that he's in. So these, the ends of bottles, are being tied together with straws. It's all recycled, all used. And that's going to form the wool and the roof of a bus shelter. So how ingenious is that? And Bethany was very taken with this hanging. She wanted to make one. But everything, just as he looked around his home, it was all reused. And he is having an influence across the whole of his village. New buildings are going up. He is just amazing. And this is a solar cooker that was in his garden. So it takes 45 minutes for the water in there to heat up. But it's a good idea. Like someone to make one for new wine. Cider. Yeah. 45 days.
So for new wine, does it take about 5 minutes to fill up? 45 days to heat up.
It's pretty clever. I can imagine one of us turning up with it on the back on our car. He's also making this jewellery, and our ladies who live at the home are going to make this jewellery from soap nuts, which is completely sustainable jewellery. It just grows, so it's like an acorn, and they take the acorn out and polish it up and make jewellery out of it. And then they also do briquette making. So we take paper pulp, mash it all up like she's done, and then it goes in this machine and you make briquettes which look like this, and they have clean smoke. They go on your fire and use them. So this guy's good, Krishna, and he's involved in our home. He's setting up the biodynamic farming. He gave me a talk on how to make pesticide from cow urine. So it's too much detail for me. Yeah, that was a highlight. This is a library that he's built for the village. Now, I should think in Nepal there's probably about five libraries. So this, again, is pioneering, made out of glass bottles, recycled glass bottles, the walls. Where are we going to next? Okay. So another bit of hope, which is a bit twisted, I hope I can explain this right, is that whilst I was in Nepal, I visited a lady in hospital called Shiva Maya, and she's about 80, I think, 70 or 80. She's suffering from kidney failure. And she was a widow from the age of about 15. She was married off at about 11 or 12, was then a widow, and just treated terribly all her life. I didn't get to meet her before meeting her in hospital, but she the reports I had from my other trustee who'd visited her was just that her family spoke to her with such contempt even after all this time. And this is because Nepal blames the woman. So if something happens to your husband, the woman is blamed for that. So Shiva Maya died just after I got back. So although I'd visited her in hospital, she died a week later. And although obviously that is sad, in a way, it is an end of that discrimination and that way of living, that traditional way is coming to an end. And I think that's something to be thankful for. She was a Christian by the end, and you know, that's great. And hopefully, I hope with her passing that, you know, we're just saying goodbye to those numbers of women that have been widows for that long and treated so badly. So that's just another bit of hope. Another bit of hope is with the generations and the literacy. So many of our women are illiterate. They can do a few numbers because obviously they need that for shopping, but their children are pretty much all in school, and they're all, like the girl I showed you, speaking English. So really a big turnaround in one generation to another. So there's hope there. We're considering starting up a new scheme. We haven't got the financing at the moment, but speak to me if you're interested in paying a little bit extra for children who are going through their post SLCs, that's like post A level, going to college to learn different skills, management skills and things, commerce. So if you were interested in supporting that, do let me know, because we'd like to, you know, really break that cycle of poverty between the generations. Another aspect of hope is the church. So this was the 8 o'clock Saturday morning service, which I went to 2 years ago, went to this time, and it's out in the car park. Well, not car park, it's outside now. So they've got an area, you know, the size of this garden. The church leaders at the front, and then the people are sat outside. It's vast, it's grown, it doubled in size in the last 2 years. And that church has 54 daughter churches. So, and different congregations on that Sunday. So there's real hope there. The church is booming. And I think, you know, you just need to pray for its influence, really, that it can have more of an impact on Nepal.
So just on the scale, you know, where we should have voted from is probably a third of the way in, so 2/3 forward, isn't there? There's another whole half to the other side beyond those pillars that you can't see, that's as big as this side, and then you've got the bit out in the car park as well. So when Anna says how many people were there, that's, you can only see probably a quarter of the people that are actually there anyway.
Yeah, and that was the 8 o'clock, so I think they had one at 10:30 and then one at 1 o'clock as well. So, yeah, so thank you that you're kind of all part of this journey, really, bringing hope to this country. And, you know, we do want to achieve things next with Women Without Roofs. So this is the hard bit, because I'm going to say to Andy on Twitter, that this is hard. I mean, I sort of come here, and I'm often talking about what we've achieved so far, but I wanted to just to turn it round and say, this is an opportunity for me to come here and say, look, I'm going to try and do this in the future. Because giving money and sorting these things out that way is quite frustrating. I watched Sport Relief this year and it was very moving, but at the end of it I just felt, oh my goodness, giving money is not enough. We have to tackle these things right from the root and get involved in justice. So I don't know if you've heard of someone called Amartya Sen. He was the Nobel Prize winning economist about 15, 20 years ago. But his great sort of thing that he's famous for is when he talks about famines. He says basically that famines are man-made. It isn't a lack of food that causes a famine. It's a lack of access to that food, and that is a man-made problem, not a kind of food problem. When people are starving, it's not because there isn't something there for them. It's just they can't get hold of it. So I think for Women Without Roofs, we want to be moving on to this whole kind of justice area rather than just being a charity that gives money and changes material circumstances. So as I've went through, Nepal is suffering from these man-made problems. The constitution is definitely a man-made problem, and it does need to be sorted. So we've had some success with sorting out this kind of problem. This is Parwati, who I showed you at the beginning. This is her citizenship papers, and we've helped her to get hold of them because the law has changed in Nepal, so you can obtain a birth certificate now without the father being present or without your husband being present. You can do it now if you're a single woman. But the problem is that it's been slow to implement. So various village districts haven't implemented this rule, although it is there in their, well, not constitution, in their legal rules. So she was delighted and really proud to show us this. And, you know, just with awareness raising to our women, we have been able to get them these birth certificates.
And what does it practically, what does that get to do for them having birth? Like, so, I imagine here it would help quite a lot.
Yeah, so they can get into college. It's for the children, it makes the biggest difference. They can get into college now. I read there was a list I put on Facebook this week, actually, an article about it. The main one is college. I think you can work for the government. That would be the other thing. And the government's a big employer over in Nepal.
Do you need to leave the country again?
Yeah, but I don't know. Our women are not particularly leaving the country. But
no, but it's...
Yeah, yeah. If you want these children, all these children who want to leave and get a job overseas, so in that case it's not so good because they would leave with it. But, yeah, it's just that freedom. And to just be recognised, isn't it? It's good to be have that recognition.
Well, so it's the good thing is it allows them to come back, because you could get out to India without it, probably. Mm. But you wouldn't be able to get back in again, so in respect to bring it, you know, the good side is it would be allowed to come back once they have learned stuff.
So I think, as I'm praying into this, for me personally, and this is why it's scary, because I want to share this, and in a sense you to hold me to account, is that we want to do something about the justice for these women. So I'm hoping, the issue that gets me is Rebecca with this rape. So she was raped and then forced to marry this man, and I just feel that just shouldn't happen, really. So I'd love to, I have a sort of idea of collecting stories like that and then bringing them to a wider awareness, and hopefully if I can understand what the law is in Nepal, hopefully stop it that way. So I'm kind of sharing that in a scary way, that you can pray for me and say that. So there's Rebecca again. I just wanted to finish on that picture, really, just to say, you know, just pray, I suppose. And that, yeah, justice is the new way forward, really. Thank you. Any more questions?
Do they not recognise then, presumably, that if she was raped, that was a crime?
So no, I don't think they do. This would be the problem with prosecuting, you see, because it's the village that's made her marry him. Mm. Whoever the village is.
So village elders' decision locally, yeah, rather than, yeah, in any kind of legal system there.
Yeah, it's her kind of peer group, it's her community. They have labelled her and then they've taken that further, really.
But he's had no...
No. No, she's just run away. That's why she's changed her name. I didn't explain it, but I know I have spoken once about her here. So she changed her name to Rebecca to escape him, really.
What if he finds her and the consequences?
I think it's unlikely that he will find her. But we have got... I don't know. I suppose he couldn't do anything while she's at the home because there's other people around. We'd have to look into that. Mm-hmm. We do have a night guard, so the man you saw earlier was there at the night. I think it's very unlikely he'd find her, because she's now in Kathmandu and then she's moved out to another village.
Is there this slightly bigger issue of the equality in which men and women are viewed, as you said earlier on about if a husband commits suicide, it's considered to be the fault of the wife? But there seems to be... I don't know whether it's because of Hinduism, an imbalance in the way in which men and women are viewed, and that there needs to be something in law which, you know, like we have in our country, where men and women stand.
Mm. I think in law they are equal.
Right.
And I think as well as the church expands there, that they will change those values.
Okay. It's the widow thing is cultural. It's not suicide, it's any man that dies, the widow's deemed. Because if in Hinduism, obviously you used to have a tradition of suti, where the woman would throw herself on the pyre, because she was supposed to go to. So
yeah.
Because they got rid of that, then the women are seen as a burden, shouldn't be there. So that's where it comes from.
Mm-hmm. I'm happy to answer any questions afterwards, if you want to come and ask me.
Anna, that's great. Good to hear.